Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hey guys, it's Lee and Dallas back with another A24 project. In this episode, we review 8th Grade and Hot Summer's Night. And joining me over a plate of chicken nuggets to break down these coming-of-age films is Dallas King. How are you, Dallas?
I'm good. Have you got the Szechuan sauce?
No, I unfortunately don't. I'm not a Rick and Morty fan.
Oh, so we're going to go back. We're going to get the sauce. We're going to get the sauce, Morty. Rick, we're going to get the sauce.
My only ever kind of knowledge of Rick and Morty and the sauce thing was when it was like a huge deal that they had some at McDonald's at the time, and then they didn't have enough for people and people went nuts and rioted and stuff like that. So that's my only real touchstone on Rick and Morty. So when they did mention the sauce, I was like, I do kind of get this bit. So yeah.
You're down with the kids, partly.
Exactly. So in A24 Hour News, we don't have anything to report from the Academy Awards, as it was another lockout for A24 this year.
Ooh.
But yeah, disappointment there. But A24 picked up at the Independent Spirit Awards with wins for the Safdie brothers, Willem Dafoe and Adam Sandler, and The Lighthouse for cinematography. So Dallas, your thoughts on the Independent Spirit Awards?
They were my Oscars. I didn't watch the show live, but I did. I was woken up one morning very early by my cats meowing at the door, so I went through and played with them and basically watched the highlights on the show. It was all on Twitter. You could basically scroll through the feed, so I basically watched most, if not all of it, very early one morning, and really enjoyed it. It was great to see A24 sort of prove that that's where they belong. The Independent Spirit was what Adam Sandler said at his thing, you know. The Academy Award might be the best looking, but they you know, they'll be their looks will fade. They'll still have their best personality awards for many years to come, and A24 probably definitely has the best personality award for the US distributors at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really pleasant to see. Sort of, if you wanted to get invited to something, it would probably be the Independent Spirit Awards. It seems like they have a really great time there. So I was really happy that, kind of, you know, it's been a rough kind of award season, really, probably for A24. That the success we kind of hope for, I think this has been their strongest year for films, and it hasn't sort of really materialized at the. Not the big table, as it were, with the Academy Awards. I think a lot of these films, whether it's The Lighthouse, Last Black Man in San Francisco, Uncut Gems, they're going to have huge kind of longevity, more so than, you know, Ford v Ferrari and, you know, other such films. So it's been a frustrating one, but I'm glad it kind of ended on a bit of a high with the Indie Spirit Awards.
I think A24 did make a cameo appearance at the Academy Awards. I heard rumours that Janelle Monáe did a song at the beginning of the show which was paid tribute to films that weren't nominated, and she was dressed as the May Queen. So I've seen photos, but I haven't seen the musical performance, but I think they may have referenced some A24 films in that. I don't know what a musical number or like Uncut Gems would look like, but I'd be keen to see it.
Yeah. So another bit of interesting news, and I'm curious to get your take on it, Dallas. So eventually, like, we are going to run out of films, you know, in more likely a few months' time, and then we'll probably go
really?
To like, yeah, we'll probably end up being like a show that will be like, hey, remember us every few months, it's time to review First Cow. You know, I imagine like we're going to probably end up reviewing some of the A24 TV shows in some form or another, because I just have such a good time talking about A24 with you.
Well, there's going to be candles, as long as they keep releasing candles. We can review merch. We'll do have merch episodes.
So the one thing that we will eventually in some form get round to talking about A24 is with their TV shows. I mean, I really enjoyed Euphoria. We'll have some of these Apple shows potentially coming up. But one thing that I think caught everyone by surprise, just kind of the news just broke as we finished recording the last one, is that A24 is bidding for the TV rights to our favourite A24 film to date, Under the Skin. So Dallas, what did you make of this news?
Interesting that, I suppose it's not beyond the realms for a film studio to remake their own product. I mean, you know, that you get reboots of superhero movies every few years with a just different incarnation of a different person in the suit. So, you know, and, you know, even before Parasite won Best Picture at the Oscars, it's already been commissioned for a US TV series. So I can see the appeal. It's going to be I mean, Under the Skin is, I think, both of currently, as at this stage of the A24 project, our favourite A24 film. So, you know, I don't think I'm precious enough to see a TV show based on it, because it won't be a straight remake of the film. And I've read the book of the film, and the film does not... It uses the book as a jumping-off point, let's be fair to say. It goes off in its own sort of direction as well. So if they did an adaptation of the book, that might be interesting to see as well, although I can imagine a situation where it's probably not going to be set in Glasgow, featuring someone driving around in a white transit van around the hills of Scotland. It'll probably be... I'm sure there'll be lots of these alien types who infiltrate the world, and we'll probably be in America or something like that. Whether we'll get a Scarlett Johansson cameo, I guess we'll have to see. You know, it's not outside the realms of possibility, I guess. What do you think of this?
Well, I've kind of tossed and turned a little bit on this news, to be honest with you, Dallas. Part of me thought at first, oh, that's really cool. I'd love to see what A24 would do with this. But then part of me has now developed a paranoid theory as well, that obviously A24 and Jonathan Glazer are making a new film together, which is fantastic news. Part of me wonders if they're looking to buy the TV rights to mothball and a TV show being made of it. Like, as I say, this is our favourite A24 film. I know that a lot of people have mixed feelings on this one. I'm sure if you canvassed most people that stan A24 or whatever, they would probably pick other films, perhaps, as top of the pile. And I'm wondering if they're sort of like thinking like they want to protect the legacy of Jonathan Glazer's film. And I think maybe Jonathan Glazer maybe has that a strong feeling on it as well. And maybe they're going to go, well, let's buy up the rights and mothball it. Like, well, let's take away from some terrible maybe backwater American cable channel that want to do like, which wacky man are we going to see killed and put into to goo this week or something like that. So part of me is maybe gone down the paranoid route of thinking there might be something going on here, but more than likely I'm talking out of my arse, so typical podcaster.
It's an interesting conspiracy theory, that's for sure. Yes, you've definitely got your tinfoil hat on there and doing the Charlie Day screaming against an entire wall of notes and pieces of string and stuff like that. So I guess it could be interesting to see, because, you know, Jonathan Glazer did such an amazing job on that film. So, and the fact that he's working with them again is great. But yeah, no, I can see where your little thought lines and stuff are going. Although the fact that you said, you know, which guy is going to get, you know, turned into goo each week, it's now just made me think that this TV series could be like a version of like The Incredible Hulk with a little hobo, where an alien goes from town to town solving, you know, crimes or mysteries and taking out the bad guy and turning them into goo and then driving off to the next town. You know, it could be that kind of TV show. Would I watch that one? I'm not sure.
And in next week's interview special, we're joined by Wayne Diamond to discuss his unforgettable appearance in the climax of Uncut Gems as, quote, the High Roller. So here's a small preview of that episode. One of the things, like, with the Safdie brothers, they've received a lot of praise for picking out, you know, you look at all their films and work, the shorts, that they have an eye for the background characters, the characters of, you know, they pick people from the streets, the people that they know, someone like yourself. What is it about them that gives them this special eye for finding talent like yourself and so many of the others?
Jennifer Vendetti also, the casting director, she's terrific, okay? Let's give her the credit also in there. That's her thing. She's done a few movies on her own, and she's pretty cool. You know, there's a guy, Nicky New York, in New York. He takes pictures of everybody. People go up on her Instagram. They're more real, you know. There are actors that makes things very real. But I think when you get a guy off the street or somebody that's not an actor, and they're able to play themselves, which I think playing yourself is harder than acting. Mm-hmm. To be able to be yourself in a movie, exactly yourself, it's not as simple as it seems. It's much harder than acting, because you have to get into you. And I think it makes the movie more real. I think it gives it more reality.
So Dallas, we're joined obviously by Wayne Diamond next week. I'm sure you didn't forget his appearance in Uncut Gems. So it sounds, I think we're going to have quite a lot of exciting stories to dive into with this gentleman.
Absolutely. When he first appeared on screen, he reminded me of, now this might be something that only UK audiences get, but he looked like the American version of David Dickinson. Sort of ultra leathery orange tan, massive glasses and the hair as well. He made a incredible impression with very little sort of screen time, and he is a man who looks like he's been around, he has lived, and he has stories, and I'm excited to hear exactly what you've managed to get out of him.
Absolutely, so something to look forward to. So last week was our 50th episode, we hit that landmark, and it seems only fitting for our 51st episode that we'll go all the way back to sort of our first episode in November 2018 as we awaited any news of an 8th grade release date here in the UK. So before we dive into 8th grade, how did it feel to hit the 50th episode landmark? It seemed to kind of creep up on us there.
I'm feeling old. Very, very old. I mean, I'm about to turn 40, so hearing 50 there is just getting me slightly panicked. It doesn't feel like it's been like, I know it's only been like a year, but somehow, you know, we've nearly pumped out like an episode a week now we're doing, which is just crazy that there's, you know, people there eager to listen to what we have to say about A24 films, but then also people who are willing to come on and chat to yourself about A24 films as well. It's fantastic.
It's been magical. So yeah, in that first episode we were, I think we kind of did the introduction of like, hey, we're going to make our way through the films of A24 and we're going to keep an eye on when that 8th grade gets a UK release date. So our first episode dropped in November 2018 and it took until April 2019 for it to kind of get a, say, wide release here in the UK. But you know, for those who aren't familiar with 8th grade, 8th grade, written and directed by first-time feature director Bo Burnham, sees Kayla, played by Elsie Fisher, an introverted teenage girl who tries to survive the last week of her disastrous 8th grade year before leaving to start high school. So Dallas, you had a very exciting first time watching this film, a really special experience for you. Do you want to tell listeners about it?
Yeah, I can, yeah, because, you know, I feel slightly guilty because, you know, you were the 8th grade stan. You were really wanting to see it. And then it got booked into the Glasgow Film Festival. Now, we go every year, so far so good. But then you realised that it clashed at the same time as you were due to go on a trip down to London to see Hamilton. So I, you know, bravely and graciously stepped up to the plate, went along to Glasgow and managed to get myself onto the red carpet and managed to speak to Bo about the film. And, you know, you've done a lot of interviews with a lot of people here. I've only done a couple. I seem to be able to stick to the red carpets, red carpet affairs. That's my game. And it was great to speak to him. You know, very, very tall man, but, you know, a great character. And he had some great answers to my questions. And I'm sure we could probably sneak in a little clip of it now, couldn't we?
Yeah, so let's hear from Bo Burnham. I can't believe we get to say that naturally.
Hey.
How does it feel to have the film sort of come to international audiences and have sort of different age ranges and generations accept the film and embrace the film? Because, you know, the technology, they may not be so familiar with it, but it's the struggles and experiences seem to be quite universal.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, all we want is for people to connect with the film and see the film. So the fact that we're here with, you know, the little weird film we made, you know, a year and a half ago in upstate New York with a bunch of 8th graders is incredible. So yeah, we just hope people can continue to connect with it. It's just like it's just a privilege. It's sort of surreal.
Yeah, and in your stand-up, which is sort of related to this, you mentioned about always the need to perform on social media. How do you think this film will help people sort of learn that they need to sort of balance the online and offline sides of their personality?
Yeah, you know, the film really isn't trying to instruct people on what to do or how to feel. Like, hopefully, you know, things like that, you know, it can hopefully inspire a conversation to have about that, but I didn't want the film to sort of finger wag or tell you what to do. Or I think there's a little too much commentary on the internet and not enough just portrayal of how it feels. So the film really is just trying to sort of portray the subjective experience of what it means for this person to be online. And then if you want to draw your own conclusions based on that, that's great. But, you know, the film, I don't want the film to have that conversation for you.
Absolutely. And finally, you've said that you'd like to work with Elsie again. Could we potentially see a like Before Sunrise style trilogy where we revisit her in 12th grade or college, sophomore year?
The truth is, she's like a kid and I want to let her live her life. You know, I don't want to like immediately have her thinking about the next film she's in. And then, or you get the Boyhood effect where then like the kid becomes a photographer because they were on set so much they of course developed an interest in photography. You know what I mean? Like, so I gotta like let her like live her life, and then, you know, in 4 years we'll check back in. If we want to do something, we'll do it. But the kid deserves some space.
Great. Thanks very much.
Take it easy.
So there we go, Bo Burnham there. So Dallas, obviously you had this amazing experience chatting to Bo Burnham before the film. What was it like to then go into the film? What was your kind of, I think this was a film we were very hyped for, there was a lot of build up to it. What was your kind of expectations going in and then your initial reaction?
I mean, my initial sort of expectations and stuff for that were basically sort of getting hyped up by yourself more than anyone else, because you kept talking about it, but when's it going to come out? I really want to see this one. And, you know, I'd seen the trailers and stuff, so I was looking forward to it. You know, when I spoke to Bo Burnham on the red carpet, I had not seen the film. I'd waited, and I know because it was available on US iTunes and stuff like that, so there could have been ways for me to see it, but like yourself, I prefer to see films if I can for the first time in the cinema. So I was chatting to him and making up questions about the film without having seen the film, which is, it's not the way you ideally want to do things, but when you get the opportunity to, you've got to take it. And then sat down, watched it, and was really taken by the film. I think one of the strengths of the film is, and we can talk about this, is, you know, it's very much a 8th grade high school girl's, you know, vision of what it's like to be in that socially awkward environment. But I think it also had a universal appeal that anyone who's ever been to school around about that age could identify with Kayla and has been through that, you know, obviously. And I think a few people talked to this in the Q&A post film about the social media aspect. I'm really glad that I did not have social media when I went to school, because it probably would have just made things even worse. But I can't imagine having to go through that. And given the age that I'm at now, sort of rewatching the film again for this rewatch, I was like, oh, how am I going to cope when I was almost looking at it from the point of view of the dad, and how am I going to cope if I had a daughter and she was going through school and going through all this kind of stuff? And it's like, how do I cope with, you know, the things that she's got to worry about and stuff like that? So yeah, it's I've seen some people sort of describe it as a horror movie, and yeah, I think at times, yeah, it is quite nerve shredding.
Yeah, as you say, I was a hype machine for this. I am a sucker for coming of age stories, so I think this was when I was really excited for kind of the news sort of filtered from Sundance. Then it came to Sundance London, and it was one of these films that I think my hype almost came from how frustratingly I was being dodged by this film. You know, we've been kind of lucky recently, I suppose, with our exposure to film festivals and opportunities like that to see a lot of these films kind of months in advance. And, you know, you think of some of the films like, you know, Uncut Gems, we got to see that months ahead of release. You know, films that are kind of, you know, making waves now in the award season, we got to see early. And 8th grade felt like sort of my white whale, like I was always missing it, and I knew I would really enjoy it. And it was just a frustration of like, I could like rent it from iTunes USA for 99 cents right now, but I cannot see it in a UK cinema. I don't even have a date that I know I'm going to get the chance to see it. And eventually it was announced by Sony that they were going to do the UK rights for it and put it as the counter programming for Against the Avengers, which was bold, but yeah, fair play. So yeah, I was really excited, and I did get to see it a few weeks early eventually into sort of a Cineworld preview screening. And yeah, I was worried I was going to be a bit too hyped up, but I absolutely adored this film, and I've kind of, I think it ended up being my most watched film of 2019 according to my Letterboxd stats. I think I saw it 4 times. I think I saw it once in the cinema, once again sort of with my girlfriend. I took her to see it as part of a double bill with Avengers. I then rented it for 99 cents, and then I bought it for like $5 or something digitally, so I got to watch it again. So it was my top watch of 2019. So yeah, I really enjoyed this film, and there's a lot I think to dive into this one. So, you know, it's 12 months on now since you got the first chance to see it. When you rewatched it, did it still have the same magic for you?
Yeah, no, it's still a fantastic film. I think in terms of, well, so it's not really a high school movie, but I could see a lot of similarities with Booksmart. It reminded me a lot of that. I could see like Kayla becoming very similar to like Caitlin Dever's character in Booksmart. I can imagine that's what Kayla would probably be like when she's older, a bit more sort of like socially awkward and unsure, but still a genuine good person. And I think there's a lot of, I think it's the kind of film, I think I'd almost said to the, tried to speak to Bo after the film and sort of said that this is the kind of film that they should show in schools for like how, you know, to be and stuff like that about, because, you know, it is a great coming of age movie. You know, it's got one of your, you know, favourite tropes, which is the underwater shot in a coming of age movie where the girl goes swimming underwater and then emerges, you know. So I'd written that down because I want to make sure that we mention that, because all good coming of age movies have something like that in it. And, you know, it's got similarities to other sort of great teen movies. I found it cringeworthy at times. It's in a similar way to like American Pie. I think there's a bit where she's, you know, trying to teach herself how to give a blowjob, and then she's got like a banana and the dad walks in and he's like, oh, you're having a banana? And she's like, yeah. And then he's like, but you don't like bananas? She goes, yeah, yeah, I do. And then eats it and then throws up and stuff like that. And it's just like, oh. But I mean, part of it is like, you worry that as, you know, a, you know, 39-year-old white male from the UK, how are you possibly going to be able to identify with, you know, the characters in this film, because it's like, she's at one point she's speaking to high schoolers and like they're asking about, oh well, when did you get Snapchat and stuff like that, and it's like they're saying that they're essentially wired differently. And I can see that that's probably a thing that, you know, kids these days have no, it's very difficult for us to relate, but there's still points that they go through, such as, you know, talking to boys, you know, that awkwardness of being at a party where you don't really know anyone and things like that. There's universal things in there which still I think help it to connect with audiences all around the world, and it, yeah, I certainly was able to connect with it as well. What about yourself?
Yeah, I that was gonna be one of my questions as well. We are both men in sort of their 30s at the moment. I think there's an element of it that's kind of universal. Yeah, the technology side, I think that's something that gets well debated and discussed no matter what age people are these days, in terms of its impact on the younger and older generations. But yeah, this, the idea of the anxiety, the stress of school, you know, the American system is certainly different. I don't know about you, Dallas, but I certainly never had active gun shooter drills in my school. So there's elements like that where, you know, it's not just the technology, but the American cultural experience, which is much different. I just thought Kayla was someone that you could really invest in. I don't struggle with anxiety, but, you know, the element of feeling, do you fit in at school, the being at the party, maybe not being the coolest person there, you know, all the little things. I think there's just so much to kind of pull from this character of Kayla. You know, I think there's probably a generation of people you talked about showing at school. You know, I can imagine maybe having a kid and showing this movie to them and maybe thinking like, Kayla, they're going to see a lot of themselves in Kayla. Maybe I'm going to see plenty of myself in The World's Best Dad, played by Josh Hamilton. So yeah, there's certainly a lot to kind of pull from the film.
You know, because I was thinking that, you know, obviously the social media aspect is something that could potentially date the film, but one thing I really liked about it is it doesn't go down the track of making references to other sort of middle school or high school movies, you know, people quoting like The Breakfast Club or Ferris Bueller or something like that, which is something which I didn't like about To All the Boys I've Loved Before, which, you know, was a fine rom-com, but it's like kids these days are still not going to be going as their first point of reference to the John Hughes movies of the 80s. That was their parents' generation's high school movies. They should be talking about other films like Mean Girls or something like She's All That, that kind of thing. That should be their point of reference, not still John Hughes. You know, sure, it's shorthand for the high school experience, but, you know, things have moved on to such a point that I think people, young kids these days, would look at that and go, what the hell is this? I don't even recognise that as being a school, you know.
Yeah, and there was one thing that we kind of touched on just a few moments ago of Josh Hamilton as Kayla's dad. I think this film has a fantastic kind of range of characters as well. I think a lot of people focus this on of Kayla's story, but there's so many people that kind of make up this great cast. Well, you've got Emily Robinson as Olivia, Luke Perrell as Aiden, Jake Ryan as the unforgettable Gabe, and Catherine Olivia as Kayla's nemesis Kennedy. What did you make of sort of these supporting characters and actors? It's what I liked about it was that it was sort of, you know, Josh Hamilton was someone I was familiar with, but it feels like this film was made up of unique characters that they'd really done their research into to casting. And you know, they, I was listening to the audio commentary the other day, there's the bit where they have the big like pose and for Kennedy's birthday party, and you see all these young girls, they're all doing different things, and none of you, and like Bo Burnham went, I love watching this because none of them take you out of this film. I think they're incredibly well cast, and I think there's so many going to be great up and coming actors and actresses in this film that have got their starters. Oh, you were that person in, you know, eighth grade. Oh, you had that little small part of the party or something like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, Josh Hamilton was someone that I wasn't actually really familiar with when I saw eighth grade. It wasn't until sort of catching, was it Kicking and Screaming, the Noah Baumbach's first film, and doing a bit of a deep dive into Baumbach after Marriage Story. That's where I kind of saw him and went, oh, it's the dad from Eighth Grade. But, you know, he was great, very natural and authentic. And I think it's one of the strengths of the film, and especially given the fact that, you know, this is written and directed by a man, is that he manages the dialogue and everything just feels like it's just these kids speaking how they would speak every other day of the week. And I think they're all incredibly authentic, natural characters, and I think that's really what makes the film work, is it just feels like you are almost seeing like a documentary at times of these kids' lives and stuff like that. And I know you spoke to Catherine Olivia, who played Kennedy, in one of the interviews, and she sort of talked about the experience of working on it as well, and sort of Bo Burnham's writing and stuff like that, didn't she?
Yes, you've perfectly segued in. So we also
I know a spot for it. I can spot a segue.
Absolutely. So we spoke with Catherine Olivia, who played Kennedy, Kayla's nemesis in this film, about sort of getting her start in eighth grade, how she came to be cast in this film, and actually she almost was potentially Kayla as well. So there's a sliding doors moment. So let's hear from Catherine Olivia about her casting in sort of eighth grade and her experience on the set. When did you sort of get approached for eighth grade? When in sort of your career was this moment where it's like, ooh, I might be in a feature film here?
I started doing more film stuff when I was around 11. And I first got an audition for Kayla, actually, when I was like 12-ish. And then the next year when I was, oh wait, no, that was when I was 13. And then when I was 14, I got a call for Kennedy, and I was like, oh, I know this film, like that's cool, it came around. And it happened like so fast. I had my first audition, and then like a week later I met with Bo, and then like 2 weeks later I met with Elsie and Bo, and then 2 weeks after that we started filming. So I was just like so insanely happy, and but it was just so fast, which was amazing. But
That's crazy. I never knew you'd sort of gone for the role of Kayla. What that seems like there's quite a gap between sort of the opportunity for Kayla and then obviously Kennedy coming along. What was the audition process like when you first got the Kayla role, for example? How did that sort of unfold?
That was just a self-tape. So I didn't really go anywhere. But when I had my audition for Kennedy, it was actually an in-person audition. So I didn't really hear much about the audition for Kayla. And then when I came back around, I was like excited because I was happy that I really liked the script. So I was like, oh, I'm glad this is taking off.
What kind of, like, you were saying that you had to film there, for example, these sort of self-tapes. Was it sort of like, here's an element of the script, or was there a certain scene that they got you to kind of perform at home, really?
I think it was like her opening monologue where it was the one she's like doing her YouTube one. I think it was that was the audition. And I think I got the whole script too, because I remember I loved it.
Was like a script like that something that was a surprise to kind of land on your kind of desk at the time?
Kind of. I think I was in seventh grade at the time, so it was like a more mature role for me. Like, she's going in to ninth grade, so I was really excited to have this challenge of someone who was like not much like me, because I am just like a very outgoing, wild person sometimes. Like, so I really liked the role because it was very different from me, and I love roles that are really different from me. So
yeah, it certainly sounds like talking to you here, like, you know, I'm talking to you here, and, you know, in the film, Kennedy seems like she can be quite distant as well. It seems like a kind of million miles away from yourself.
Yeah, when I played Kennedy, it was like a totally different world for me, and I really try to stay off social media and my phone, period. I didn't get a phone until like January. I had a flip phone, but Kennedy was just a different world for me, because I had my mom's phone, and just to get into character, I would listen to Ariana Grande, and I would use Snapchat on her phone, and like just use the filters, and just to really get that like plugged in social media feel of life that I had never had before, because it's so important to her character, because she's all about her image on social media. And yeah,
when you sort of had that audition process that you met Bo Burnham and Elsie Fisher, what was that kind of experience like to be in sort of the audition room, and how did you sort of kind of, what was the dynamic within it?
It was like super chill, which I was like really nervous, because I was like, oh my god, I'm meeting with this director, and he's like the nicest person ever. So I just walked in and he's like, hey, what's going on? Like, I was nervous before, but then once I got in there, I was completely relaxed, and he was so fun to read with, because you could just see how invested he was in the characters and the script, and he like put his heart and soul into it. So it was just so wonderful to work with him. And then when I met Elsie, like, we instantly were like really good friends, and she's so funny and nice and such a talented actress. It was just such a pleasure to work with them, just even in the audition. And then when I found out that I got it, I was like, I can't believe I'm going to spend my summer with these incredible people.
That must have been an amazing phone call to get. Like, it just blows my mind what that must have been like.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Did you sort of know much about Bo Burnham going in? Because one thing, when I sort of eighth grade was coming along and I started to learn about Bo Burnham as like a comedian and sort of his internet background, I've read comments from people like Elsie Fisher and a lot of others about kind of Bo Burnham's comedy really resonates with teenage women and young girls. Was that the same sort of for you, or did you sort of come to him kind of absolutely brand new?
I knew a little bit of him, but I have never really been like a YouTube person, like, so I wasn't super familiar with him, but I knew like a couple of his vines and stuff just from my friends. But then once I knew I was gonna meet him, I started like watching his comedy and stuff, and I was like, this is like so relatable to Gen Z, and I loved it.
When you kind of got to your first day on set, what was that like, sort of here you are in this big movie? Did it feel like it was sort of the start of something special, or was it sort of just a normal day on set?
I was like completely blown away. It was my first time ever on a movie set, so I was freaking out. But I was like, okay, I need to stay calm, just need to do my thing. But yeah, it was incredible. Everyone was so nice, and there was this energy, like everyone could tell that this was something special, but like, it was, we had so much fun making it. We were like, is this really like gonna make out to be something? But like, we all could kind of tell how important and how everyone needs this movie right now, that it was going to be huge, but we were like, we had so much fun. Like, is it actually going to be huge? Like, I couldn't believe that I was actually going to be in this movie.
Was there anything that caught you by surprise, that, as you mentioned, you know, a lover of theatre and film, and that first day on set, was there anything you thought, oh my god, this isn't what I perhaps expected, in a positive way, or was there anything that kind of caught you by surprise?
Well, just kind of like some of the terms that they would use, I wasn't as familiar with, but nothing really caught me by surprise. It was just like everything that I had dreamed it would be, which was so incredible. But yeah, some of the terms I was just like, what does that mean? So now like I know all the different terms and I'm way more comfortable with it.
I think one of the absolute highlights of the film is your birthday pool party. What was that like? How was that sort of film that constructed? Was that over like several days? And it just seemed like absolutely pandemonium, like on screen. What was it like to shoot that?
That was like a complete blast. That was the best part of my summer. It was filmed over a couple days, I think like 3 or 4 days. Yeah, 3 days. And it was just so much fun. We all just got to improv a lot, to just doing weird teenage fun things, and yeah, they just like played music and we would dance in the pool, and yeah, it was just so much fun.
You get to be sort of the star really of that scene. For example, you're the birthday girl, etc. And we get to learn a lot more about sort of Kennedy in this scene as well. What was that like as an actress to kind of get stuck into and almost be the sort of center of attention like that for a big party?
It was a lot of pressure. Like I was nervous, but everyone was so kind to me, and all of the other girls who were at the pool party were so funny and nice. We all just were really good friends, and the girl Nora, who played my best friend, like we were best friends off and on set too, so everyone just made it such a great environment that I didn't have to be nervous, so I was so grateful for that.
Was it difficult getting roles like that? Because you can almost feel that moment of like you're opening all these presents and then you get this sort of go fish type game and it just sort of turns that little bit sour and awkward. Was that difficult for a role to kind of play, thinking like, oh, I'm really upsetting this kind of character here? Or was it like, yeah, this is the job?
I was really nervous that everyone on set was going to think I was actually a mean person. So I was freaking out, but Elsie was so great because she was just like, yo, like it's acting, you know, like it's fine, we're cool. And I was just like, can I hug you, when I'm like, oh, can we get one with just the squad, and like she steps away like that. That was really hard to film because I just felt so bad, because I like stuff like that has happened to me, so like I felt terrible doing it to someone else even if it was acting. But you know, as actors, we were like, yeah, this is just what we gotta do. And part of it was kind of fun to play someone that's totally different from me.
Sometimes they say it's always better to play the baddie than the kind of goodie. There's something more to kind of dig into with something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, when I would get ready in the morning, I would just, like, get in the zone. I would be, like, I got out of the shower and I had like my hair and like a turban, and I was like this queen, like with Ariana Grande playing, and I was just really getting in the zone of Kennedy, and because she's so self-absorbed that she was, I had to like get there every day, so that like that moment before filming just really got me there.
So that's something new for me. So Ariana Grande, was that sort of someone that you sort of looked to as sort of your potential inspiration for this young Kennedy character?
Oh, yes, definitely. That was, like, that's her favorite artist. She worships her. And that came a lot from people that I knew that I based Kennedy off of. And I just felt like, yeah, like I don't listen to Ariana Grande usually myself. So I needed someone, like music really got me in that zone. So yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, was there any, you were saying there was some other kind of things you pulled from, was that sort of people that you'd kind of met, you'd mentioned sort of that you've been that person that's been cut out of the photo, for example, or was it sort of, you know, other kind of musicians or talent that you sort of drew from to kind of bring Kennedy to life?
Yeah, and just, like, the style that she dressed in, too, is completely different from me, and my hair is actually, like, super curly, so they straighten my hair every day, Diana was my hairstylist. She was a good woman for spending an hour every day doing that. And so that just having this entirely different persona was really, it really got me into character, and it was really easy to get into character with my hair straight. And I wore like all the name brand shoes and these trendy clothes that I never would have worn before. So that really was what got me into character too.
I love the scene sort of later on that, you know, your clash with Kayla at kind of graduation day. How do you sort of kind of prepare for the scenes like that, where it's like, it's almost like it's been building through this kind of whole film that Kayla's been trying to reach out to you, whether it's through DMs or little letters, that, you know, we've all probably been in that situation, and it kind of climaxes in that sort of put down of Kennedy in that graduation scene, and you have this excellent shell-shocked impression look on your face during it. What was it like to shoot on that day? Was that kind of at the end of the film, or was it sort of somewhere in the middle?
That was in the middle. So we filmed all the stuff at the school. That was the first week of filming. So we filmed like the superlative the first day, and then later we filmed that scene. And then in August we filmed the pool party stuff. So it was pretty early on in the film, but we had done all of our other scenes at the school, so that kind of helped get into like the groove of what our relationship was. And yeah, I was really nervous that day of filming, because I was like, my mom and I were driving to set, I was like, Mom, I'm just really worried, I think I'm gonna cry because I'm gonna feel so bad. And so I was really worried, but it was so powerful to watch her, because she just like does what everyone wishes they could do and could have done. And so I was just blown away by her performance, that it just came naturally, that I was just like so blown away. But yeah, I was really worried that I was going to cry.
What was it like when you just, that scene's kind of done, was it like I can breathe now, or did the sort of the emotion get the kind of the better?
It was kind of like, I need a moment. Like, it was, we both were just, like, breathe, and it was, yeah, we didn't even have to do it that many times, because, like, just the raw emotion of it was so beautifully done. There wasn't much else to do, but yeah.
Have you ever kind of, you touched on it, you're like, oh, people might think I'm, you know, kind of this terrible kind of Kennedy or something at times. Have you ever kind of had people kind of maybe scared to approach you or talk to you after maybe some screenings or etc., kind of thinking, I wonder if she is this kind of colder character, or I'm going to just be completely ignored by her if I go up and say hello?
Not really, because like I think it's the way that I dress that people aren't as intimidated, because I like at the screenings and stuff my hair was curly, and like I was wearing more outfits that are my style, so I didn't look as much like Kennedy, so I think that left off the pressure more of talking to the mean girl, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I wondered as well, like, when I was kind of rewatching it the other day, that it's even more interesting now that I know that you're new to kind of phones, etc. In those sort of scenes where you are so engrossed in your phone, whether you're interacting with Kayla or other characters, what is actually going on the phones? Is it just like blank screens, or have you got like Spotify or some sort of online content on the go at the time? How do you sort of, how are you directed in sort of playing on those phones?
Bo just kind of let us like do what we felt our character would do. So I would go online on these like different like fashion websites, or like look at different nail polish or whatever that I felt like Kennedy would use, that she wanted to do for her graduation. So it was just like that kind of thing. And that was really helpful to get into character too. That way I was actually looking at something and being in that moment.
Yeah. And what was your eighth grade experience like? I think I always think of the tagline for the film, eighth grade is hell. What was your experiences like of going through eighth grade, and did you know kind of Kennedys and Kaylas and all those other characters?
I absolutely knew all of the characters. And that's why I loved this film so much, because I was like, I know every single person that they're talking about in this film. And my experience was like, I don't know, I think it was like pretty much everyone else's, where it wasn't the greatest, but it wasn't like horrible. And I was homeschooled, so there wasn't as much drama for me to have to get wrapped up in. But, you know, wherever you go, there always is drama anyway. But I was fortunate enough to be surrounded by a lot of friends, too. Like, my best friend has stayed with me through thick and thin and everything. So I'm so grateful that I had her, because I was a lot like Kayla, but at least I had someone that I knew was always there for me. So I think that that was what was really important to me. And I always, like, it broke my heart that Kayla didn't have someone like that.
And do you think that's one of the things of the film, is that it maybe encourages people to reach out to those that we are maybe cutting from photograph scenes, or that person that seems the most quiet in the classroom?
Oh, absolutely.
And when did you sort of first see the film completed? What was the turnaround from finishing this film and going away to coming back and now watching this finished feature?
It was so amazing. I first saw it at the Boston Film Festival with my whole family, because my family is from Boston, so it was like my entire family was there. And you know, the first time that I saw it, it was more of, like, me judging myself and, like, what was different from the script and that kind of thing. I didn't, like, get the full picture at first, because I, like, just seeing my face on the screen, I was like, oh, why did they not make that facial expression? Like, why did I do that? Because it's just, like, so weird to see yourself up there and, like, my parents and my grandparents are watching the film too, so like it was also awkward to like be next to them. But as I saw the film more and more, like the second time that I saw it, I was like, oh my god, like this is actually like amazing. It's so incredible. Not that like I think that I did a bad job, but like that everyone did so amazing. And yeah, it's just like this piece of art, and I was like so grateful to be a part of that.
Have you kind of all the eighth graders from the film in Bow, have you kind of all kept in touch, or is it one of those ones, is it like sort of any professional job, you go your own way?
Yeah, we've all kept in touch pretty well. I mostly talk to Elsie and Nora, like those are the people who I keep the most in touch with. But yeah, it was such a special experience that everyone seems like they really loved who their scenes were with, which is so special. So yeah,
it's been a year really now since the film came out, and it only actually came to the UK actually in March. It came out the same day as Avengers Endgame, and it was a film I was waiting forever for the film to come out in the UK. What's been the impact of that film for you, and sort of generally with the film?
It's been so amazing. Like I'm really just so grateful that I got to be a part of it, because everyone loved it so much, and I was so grateful that other people related to it and loved it as much as all of us loved it, because we all knew that it was special and important. But for like the world to see it and say, oh my god, this is exactly what we need, this is so important, and yeah, it was just so incredible.
What have been kind of the reaction of, say, friends, fellow eighth graders, when they've seen the film? That I know there's quite some great videos. There's one of Bo and Elsie in particular, where they're watching eighth graders reacting to the film and trailers and scenes. What's been the feedback you've received from the film?
It's my friends are like, they all really liked the movie. Like they like tease me about it once in a while. Like they'll be like, oh, Kennedy, like, but yeah, they all were like, Catherine, this is like really good. Like when you said you were in a movie, we didn't like really believe you, but like now we're like buying tickets to go see your movie. So like, I guess you are in a movie, so that was really funny. But yeah, like, other people who, like, don't know me as well, see, like, they're not as afraid of me if they meet me in person, because, like I said, I look totally different, but, like, on social media, people have been like, oh, why are you so mean? Like, stuff like that, and it's just funny, but yeah.
So there we go, we've had one of the directors and one of the stars today. So an exciting kind of insight into 8th grade, not just from us, but from the actual people involved.
Yeah, no, it's always great to hear these behind-the-scenes stories, you know, because you watch the finished product and sometimes you can forget, you know, just what goes into making a film like this, when especially when it just feels so effortless and naturalistic, you know, that there's still, you know, a script to be done, shots to be done, you know, direction and whatever, but it just all seems to come together so easily, and it's great to hear what happens, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah, at the weekend I was actually lucky enough to see Anna Meredith, the Scottish composer behind the score for 8th grade. So her score is our exit music here on the podcast. What did you make of the score, Dallas? For me, it's probably second to Under the Skin in the A24 filmography.
Okay, right. Well, the first time around, I wasn't. I don't know if I really noticed the music too much, but the second time, I certainly noticed it. There's like this sort of track which sort of builds and builds and builds at certain key moments where it seems like she's getting more stressed and her anxiety is raising because of the situation she's put herself in. And it was like, that sort of feels like another sort of score that I'd heard recently, which was Living With Yourself, the Paul Rudd Netflix series. And it wasn't only just until on a recent other podcast where you talked about Anna Meredith that you said that she'd done both of them, and now it makes total sense. And I'm really sort of keen to, I didn't realise she was Scottish, but I'm really keen to see what she does in the future in terms of film scores as well, because I'm a sucker for someone who does film scores.
Yeah, it's such a good score. And yeah, if you get the chance to see her live, it was definitely one of the best gigs I've seen in quite a while. So yeah, it was a real pleasure to see that. And I say that was my first introduction to Anna Meredith, was the 8th grade score. And I just remembered when that theme music kind of kicks in over the credits and at the start of the film, and I was like, oh wow, this is such a great score. It really felt like they'd sort of nailed like the sound of the internet, like something special kind of going on. I don't know, that's maybe my
the sound of the internet. I like it.
Exactly, you almost get the impression of, like, you know, like, it has this building crescendo, like, maybe similar to a modem, but more pleasant on the ears.
You see, that's the thing the kids won't get. Dial-up modems. They won't understand the noise that was made as you tried to dial in to the internet. It's just there now. It's just there. They don't have to dial in.
So where does this film sort of rank in the A24 filmography for you so far? Where I think we're just hitting the 69th and 70th films in our watch, our A24 watch.
Oh, now that's put me on the spot, because I actually haven't updated my letterbox in a while. But I think it would probably be around sort of top 10, top 15 at the moment. I will try and pull it up just now and see if I'm going to move anything around, but you can tell me where you put it and then I'll come back to you.
So it has currently landed at fifth place. So it's sandwiched between Moonlight and American Honey for me. So my current top five is 8th grade, Moonlight, A Ghost Story, Lady Bird, and Under the Skin. So yeah, 8th grade certainly made a huge impact. It's one that really felt tailored to things I love in films. And I really can't wait to see what Bo Burnham does next as a writer, director. I know that people seem to highlight that he seems to get into the mind of teenage girls really well. So I'm curious to see where he goes next and what he does as a filmmaker. It's one of the best debut films, I think, certainly the past few years.
Absolutely, and he's part of an incredibly talented couple, because I think his girlfriend is Lauren Scarafi, and she did Hustlers last year as well. So I mean, they could be the new Gerwig and Baumbach, really, in terms of the A24 first, as you know, but then Baumbach and Gerwig are both A24 filmmakers as well. A24 have they've got three incredible power couples, because I didn't realise until about a week ago that Lulu Wong and Barry Jenkins were a couple. And I'm like, what? So A24, three power couples. It's quite impressive.
Yeah, it's been incredible. Like, I never realised until this season as well. I thought, oh, they seem to get on really well on social media. Like, oh, that's nice that he has a picture of her film as his social media profile picture. Oh, right. You know, it all, you know, we can dive into these films and we notice so many little different pieces about the films, but sometimes it's the most obvious things in real life in front of us that just kind of, that we kind of seem to miss.
Yeah, well, coming soon on A24 Project is A24 Hour News and Gossip Channel. We'll have regular gossip updates about who's dating who in the world of A24. But I have now looked at my letterbox and I'm going to bump Disaster Artist down to 11th place and put 8th Grade in at 10th place for the time being. But I will need to actually properly update that because I think there's a few episodes that need to go in there. But I think it's pretty safe and secure at the moment at 10th place.
Sounds good. So, have you got any final thoughts on 8th Grade?
No, apart from maybe one thing that I just really like the message of sort of putting yourself out there. She talks about one of her videos, and you know, she doesn't always heed her own advice. It's like she's trying to kid herself into doing these things that she doesn't. But you know, it does strike me that, you know, she puts them out on YouTube. You know, we actually do, anyone who does podcasting essentially is doing something similar. You know, we're putting ourselves out there, we're putting out our views and our thoughts, and you know, it's always sometimes a bit nerve-wracking to put it out there. Is A1 anyone going to listen? And then, you know, what are they going to think about it? But you know, we've had some great feedback so far. You know, if you'd like to leave feedback, you know, you can always give us a rating on iTunes, and you know, it's always great to see what people think of it and let us know what you want us to cover and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to Hot Summer's Night. So in the summer of 1991, a sheltered teenage boy, Daniel, played by Timothée Chalamet, who comes of age during a wild summer he spends in Cape Cod, getting rich from selling pot to gangsters, falling in love for the first time, partying, and eventually realizing that he's in over his head. So Dallas, when was the first time you watched this, and what was your expectations going in?
I watched this last week for the very first time. It's one of those ones which is a US iTunes release, and I got it for 99 cents, total bargain, so that was lovely. I wasn't really sure what it was going into it. I knew that, of course, it had, you know, Man of the Moment, the Chalamet, you know, riding crest of the wave off of Little Women. And, you know, he's become, you know, he's the new Robert Pattinson in terms of, you know, screaming, adoring fans on the red carpets, whereas Robert Pattinson has sort of given him, handed him the torch and said, you can deal with all that. I'm going to make my A24 movies and then go be the Batman, and then I'll come back on the red carpet in a couple of years. So Timothée Chalamet is keeping Pattinson's spot warm at the moment. But yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised by this one. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I actually, you know, I really enjoyed it. When was the first time you sort of saw her, or this one came onto your radar?
Yeah, it's one of those ones. It was always on my sort of list of A24 films that I need to kind of get round to watching. So I caught it a kind of few months ago. I picked up in a sort of 99 cents rental sale on iTunes, and it was one of those ones I didn't know really anything about it. I think I caught the trailer the year it came out, and I thought, oh, that looks good and enjoyable. I will have to check that one out. And then it sort of never seemed to have kind of made its way through to the UK. Really, I think it's only available recently, sort of on Now TV, sort of Sky Movies kind of cable channel. So it's been one of those ones, unlike 8th Grade, I don't think it ever got a cinema release here in the UK. It seems to have been given a bit of a short shift there. But you kind of mentioned that you were pretty keen on the film. What was it, your immediate kind of reaction? What was it you liked about the film?
I mean, I really like the sort of retro vibe to it. You know, it was an interesting one. It actually reminded me at points that the filmmaker was going for sort of an Edgar Wright style sort of thing. There's a lot of smash cuts, there's a lot of cut shots of, you know, if someone was making a drink or a coffee or something, it'd be a shot of the coffee mug, the drink going in, stuff like that. So, you know, it's clearly homaging different styles. But what was one of the most interesting things for me was the fact that this is a film set in 1991. You know, apparently based on a true story, the storm which sort of comes in towards the film, you know, actually one thing about this film that made me think, it was, do you ever watch Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
You bet I do.
There's a lovely quote that he says, you know, in one of the sort of cutaway interviews about the show that he does, he's subtext is for cowards. And I just love the fact that this basically has a literal and metaphorical perfect storm coming in. And I've read up on the film afterwards and discovered that the storm that affected Cape Cod that year was the perfect storm of the perfect storm, with George Clooney in that. So it was a really big deal. And
I really liked the sort of storytelling aspect of it, and it was interesting for me that even though it was set in the 90s, it wasn't a 90s film. You know, the fashions and stuff like that had a Stranger Things vibe to them. So 1991, I guess people were still at the end, the tail end of the 80s, you know, they were still wearing all that clothes. But it was the fact that the musical choices were all sort of songs from like the 60s and 70s rather than dating it with, you know, music from 1991 and stuff like that. It was an interesting choice, and it sort of gave it more of a sort of romantic, nostalgic, dreamlike quality, I think, rather than making it a rooted period piece, you know, in 1991. It gave it more of a sort of dreamlike quality. I guess you've got that with the sort of narration as well, I think.
See, that was a problem I had a bit with the film, was the music choices that felt really obvious for this style of film. You know, when I was kind of watching this film, and, you know, when I kind of was watching this, so this is our second kind of debut writer-director film, so this is Elijah Bynum. I looked at this film as, like, it's a really good calling card film. It's very stylishly put together, the good performances. It's, you know, it's got, you know, a vision there. It's something that has been really well put together. It's just, I've seen this film perhaps done a bit better in various respects. And I just, like, with the soundtrack, I would be like, it felt like all the music cues were really obvious kind of cues and stuff. Like, there wasn't anything with this film that I felt, oh wow, that's really original. It just felt like, oh, this is the type of film I've seen done many a time before, but it's done well enough that I'm excited to see what this person does next, and hopefully it's maybe something just a little bit more original. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I mean, yeah, it's not original in the sense that it's just, you know, a coming-of-age story. You know, it's done in a way that's been done before, but, you know, it's very competently told. It's well shot, well acted. You know, this is a film that made me go, whatever happened to Micah Monroe? You know, she was up and coming, you know, she was in It Follows. She's someone who, I mean, clearly, certainly in this film, the camera loves her. Everybody loves her. All the men and boys in the town love this girl, and it's clear to see that the camera does as well. And it's just, she's someone that I really want to see more of on the big screen. I think she's a real talent, and she really needs that sort of real breakout role. You know, she was in The Guest as well, which, you know, I know you're a huge fan of, and it's, she's just someone that I want to see more of. You know, almost feels like this film was just ahead of its time in the fact that it, like, came out before Timothée Chalamet got big, really big, with sort of Call Me By Your Name. I think it probably came out this sort of summer before that, and so it just was a case of missed timing and opportunities. But there was still a lot I enjoyed about the film. There were some things which didn't really work for me. The voiceover that accompanies the film, it sort of is really sort of heavily used at the beginning and then drops out for two-thirds of the film, comes back just at the end, and then turns out to be a character that you've not really ever met before and has no real relevance to the plot. And, like, how does he know all this stuff? It's just like one of those that kind of didn't land for me. But, you know, there were some really good elements. You know, like, there was a, see, now I'm potentially going to risk your wrath here, because I'm going to mention a couple of films which you might go, where's he going with this? And that's absolutely clearly not the case. But, you know, there's a scene where he starts to get in over his head and goes to do a drug deal with this drug dealer that he's never met before. And it's really, so for some reason, he's dressed as Pokemon, Ash from Pokemon. He's got the same sort of hat and style. Like, it was just, that took me out of the film slightly. It was like, why is he dressed like the guy from Pokemon? I don't know. But William Finchter plays the drug dealer, and there was a sort of building tension in that sort of reminded me of the scene in Boogie Nights with Alfred Molina, where they're trying to get drugs off of him, and it just, you just don't know what this guy's going to do. And it was kind of like that. And then the sort of storm, this building storm at the end, where all the sort of characters slowly sort of reach their peak, it reminded me again of like the Frog Storm at Magnolia, and if it was going to become something like that, because it had voiceover narration as well. So now I've just compared this film twice to the work of Paul Thomas Anderson. How do you feel about me doing that?
I think they wish, like, I was it was like there was one of the song cues reminded me incredibly of Inherent Vice as well. I think there was elements of that with the kind of the stoner aspect of it, but again, I like, this is clearly like a director that has a lot of influences and inspirations, and I could see sort of the Paul Thomas Anderson aspect. I would just love to see something that, I just want to see his next film, you know. It's not a debut that disappointed me, it's just something I'm like, ah, there's a talent there, but I want to see something a bit more original, something more unique from this guy. But, you know, a really, really enjoyable start, a great calling card film. And, you know, I want to go back a little bit to what you said about Mika Monroe. I mean, yeah, she blew me away in The Guest. And while I wasn't the biggest fan of It Follows, she excelled there. But it feels like her career hasn't gone sort of where I anticipated. You know, she's good here and there. I really enjoyed her in the criminally underrated Greta as well. You know, I just feel like she needs... you know, she needs that breakout film, something that's going to put her in the lead. She's a great actress, and I thought she put in another really good performance in this as well.
So what you're saying is she needs a lead role in an A24 film, really, in order to give her that breakout performance.
There we go. See, yeah, you've got a great idea there. But one thing you did touch on there, this is Timothée Chalamet's film here. What is your opinion on it? We didn't really dive into it much when we discussed Lady Bird.
He's an odd one. I feel conflicted about him because, you know, I thought he was good in Call Me By Your Name, and then there started to be this whole sort of, you know, this he's the it boy or whatever the moment, you know, and I wasn't really buying into the hype for a long time. You know, he was okay as a douchebag in Lady Bird, but I've then gone around on him, and I thought he was actually really good in Little Women. I thought Gerwig manages to bring out some real new side of him that I hadn't seen before. So I'm really keen to see where his career goes. I think he's actually a genuine talent. He maybe doesn't have as much to do here in this one because it is such a sort of a role that you've kind of seen before, you know. Good guy who gets in over his head, turn bad, meets the girl of his dreams, that kind of thing. It's a very sort of safe role, but I think he is the real deal now. I've come around on him, I think.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I think what puts me off a little bit is the sort of the fandom that surrounds him. I find it just a bit much. Like, I think he's put in some really good performances. I think it's going to be the next couple of years will be sort of interesting. I'm excited to see what he does in June. I didn't get the chance to see The King yet, but yeah, he's a good actor and so on. I thought one of the kind of worst things in sort of the past few years was Beautiful Boy, and I think sometimes the problem is that Timothée Chalamet, it's hard to shake the feeling that you're watching Timothée Chalamet in a film. He doesn't seem to sort of like shed that sort of dream boy looks. It's sort of like you almost get the impression of sort of Timothée Chalamet as a Mr. Ben type, where it's like, it's Timothée Chalamet, he's off into Mr. Ben's shop, what's he going to come out today? Oh, he's like the King of France. Oh, it's Timothée Chalamet, what's he going to do now? Oh, he's going to come out as Ash Ketchum in a sort of stoner comedy, you know, all these sorts of things. I just want to see him throw himself completely into a role and become a bit alien to this audience. But it'll be interesting to see. He's picking interesting and good directors to work with, so it'll be interesting to see where his career kind of goes in the coming years.
You realise you've now risked the wrath of Ayanna Murray and the Timothée Chalamet stands by your slightly derogatory phrasing there about his performances and stuff like that. So, especially Beautiful Boy, I know a lot of people who are big fans. I myself, I think I was more with you. I think Steve Carell was magnificent in Beautiful Boy, but he wasn't. I think he was maybe going too far to the what people think of as a junkie on screen sort of performance on that. But he's got an interesting career ahead. I think he's probably going to have one similar to Robert Pattinson, in that, say, he's kind of avoided the blockbuster route so far that Pattinson started with. But I think he's the kind of guy who will continue doing indie work with filmmakers and stuff like that, and people will sort of, everyone will realise that his talent will shine through in the end, just as people have finally realised with Pattinson, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we'll see where that one goes. So if he comes back onto another A24 film, I'm sure we'll review his work again in the future. So
and Dallas, we'd be happy to have him on as a guest as well.
Yeah, the door's open. I'm happy to delete all my derogatory comments about him being a Mr. Ben type from this episode. So that's easy done. So Dallas, any final thoughts on this film?
Well, yeah, no, I was really keen. I liked it. You know, I'm a huge sort of Stranger Things fan, so it had that sort of kind of vibe to me. It's almost like the sort of thing that, like in the Grease, the sort of the fictional version of the hot summer nights that they have. It's like it's clearly a embellishment, a dream sort of scenario of how, you know, your life would pan out. Obviously, you know, things go wrong in this one, but you know, ultimately it's a bit of a fantasy, and you know, I was down for the ride for the most part, and I enjoyed it. And like you say, I'm keen to see where the filmmaker goes next, and whether it's with A24 or with someone else. You know, he'd be an interesting one to have on the show as well to talk to about how that film came together.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will be back in 2 weeks' time to discuss Never Going Back and A Prayer Before Dawn. So until then, Gucci.